Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thank you, Don. This is John Williams in the Allstate Skyline Studio. No government shutdown here, by golly. I wasn't here last Saturday. I was with a bunch of listeners and our friends from the White Sox in Mexico, but we broadcast all that week from there, and now we're back in Chicago and happy to be home. And on a Saturday with Don filling in for Doma T, Joe Brandon Sports producer Griffin Filipich is here, and I'm glad to see you guys. Everybody doing pretty well, I hope, huh?
Yes, sir. Happy holidays to you, John.
But for those of you keeping score at home, I didn't even remember this. This is the third government shutdown we've had in this country this year. We had a three-day one in January, I guess, a two-day one in February, am I reading this correctly, and one in now December that is one day old. So hopefully that will be resolved soon, and it won't interrupt too many people's lives too much.
Right.
Speaking of, I don't know, somehow or another, this segues in my brain. The story you did at the end there, Don?
Mm-hmm. That's right, about the student loan debt.
Okay. So can you just give us that story or the particulars on that again?
Sure. It's basically over 15,000 Americans could have their student loan debt canceled thanks to the U.S. Department of Education. It's an old rule, but it's being newly enforced, called the Borrower Defense Rule. And basically, if students' college was shut down at any point between November 1st of 2013 and December 4th of this year, their loans get canceled, and that's at between that time, that's more than 3,600 schools have closed down. So collectively, it's looking around $150 million in debt that could get forgiven, and maybe even millions more than that.
So now we're rooting for the demise of our alma mater.
Well, if Southern Illinois could just fold tomorrow, that would work out real well for the home team here. I'll
Illinois State's doing so great right now, but it'd just be great if it did just shut down.
Still paying off some student loans, John?
Are you kidding me?
Stupid U of I, all that money in the endowment.
Well, Joe, I would believe. No disrespect, but
Joe's younger.
You've got a couple years on him.
Yeah, no, really. Actually, my student loan debt, when I graduated from college, and I had the luxury of going to a junior college for 2 years, and my dad worked at the school, so if there was an expense, it wasn't much. I started to accrue debt my junior year in college at Southern Illinois at Carbondale, and when I graduated, I had to pay $50 every month for several years until it was paid off. That has scarred me this way. I'm as liberal as they come. I'm happy to pay taxes. I'm happy to give money to charity. I'm happy to give your money to other people. So that's the side, that's the team I play for. But every time there's a story like this where they say, well, the school that you are giving your money to is bankrupt now, so you don't have anybody to give money to, somebody is owed money.
Right.
And you are on the hook for that. There's another program. If you make your tuition payment, if you make your loan payment for 10 consecutive years without missing a payment, and that's insane long, right? I mean, nobody should have a 10-year loan to go to school for 4 years to try and make a living. But that's what happens. If you do that after 10 years, all of a sudden whatever you owe is goes away, to which a bank somewhere said, oh, really? Because, you know, that's a legitimate business. I lend you money, you pay me back. Why do you now no longer owe me money?
Isn't it something, too, if you work for the state for 10 years or
so? There's another one where if you are in public service, and I know a little bit about this because I've interviewed Ray Kaplan over at the Kaplan Law Firm. They're a sponsor of ours that we discovered. She was a guest at first, and what she was saying was so compelling, she started to advertise, and her business is doing well, frankly, but there are so many ways to get your student debt forgiven or cut in half legally. And you know, nobody's pulling the rug out from anybody else. These are laws on the books for a reason. But a lot of people don't know what they are. And one of them is that if you are working for a nonprofit, if you're a firefighter, if you're a teacher, if you're a police officer, if you work for the federal, state, or local government, the list goes on. If you're working for the municipality, there's loan forgiveness programs that are crazy out there. And those of us who never fell into those buckets just don't understand that.
This is like, I don't like the tenor of your argument, though, which is that I had a bad you should have it
that
bad.
That is 100% my argument.
That's always the wrong way to go. Everyone loses when people think like that, and a lot of people do on a lot of different issues, right? Like, this is the argument against raising the minimum wage, which, you know, maybe a lot of listeners agree with, not raising the minimum wage. But I personally believe, you know, that's the kind of argument that people use. Like, there are jobs that require skills that people acquire, and they get paid more for that. But I don't know. It would be better if everybody got paid more.
Yeah.
And I just, I always reject that kind of sentiment.
Well, I'm not saying it's logical, but I'm saying that's where...
That's fair. That's fair. Yeah.
And I'm saying that is there, though, right? And you're right, Griffin. Just because it was wrong then doesn't mean it should be wrong now. Maybe the wage should be higher. Maybe.
And these debts are bought and sold, and their value changes. It's like, don't you always feel at a certain point it gets so complicated that money is... not real. It's confusing.
I you've confused me enough to agree with whatever it is you just said.
It's true, though. That, these debts can be paid off for far less than they started at. You know what I mean? It's strange, but there's something fundamental.
It seems to me like if I want to go to school and I don't have $100 and you have $100, you'll give me $100, but I promise to give you $108 back over time. And then if I give you $60 over a long enough period of time, the other $48, somebody goes, oh, it's so complicated now. And that was a long time ago. You know, I always thought I wanted to be a bank when I grow up, but stuff like this makes me think that's not right. That's not right. Okay.
I just don't know who you're arguing for. Like,
The banks, the multinational banks.
Well, I agree with you, John. I mean, where does that money go? It's just...
That's it. If it would be like you could walk into a store and take a candy bar, and then if you take enough candy bars over time, they go, oh, well, just give us some of the candy bars back.
But really, the underlying all of this, you do believe that the banks are suffering more than the people who are crushed by student loan debt. That's what it sounds like.
That's such a red pickled herring. That is not what I'm talking about.
but it seems like that's what's animating you. I know that's not your actual point, but like...
My point is...
Why would this point be worth making unless you felt like people were not struggling...
And that is a conversation I'm not having. When I have a conversation with you, I'll sound like my liberal self. In this case, though, I simply do not understand why the government or anybody else intervenes to forgive a debt that somebody else legitimately has and might, in fact, be able to pay off. That's fundamental. If you buy something or if you subscribe to a service and you agree to pay for it, then you should pay for it.
Maybe they could send that money your way.
I'm telling you, doesn't that sound okay? So, Merry Christmas, everybody! I'm so glad John's back. Maybe he could go to Mexico some more. My brain hurts. We're just trying to make some cookies here and have some eggnog for the holidays. When we did our Christmas special at the radio station, all of the shows are asked to turn in a 1 hour long special, and so Lou and Lou and Lindsay, I think, sat down and had a conversation based on some old adages and wisdom and talked about how that reflects their feelings and their Christmases. I haven't heard it yet, but Lou is telling me a little bit about it, and it sounded just so Lou Manfredini and charming, and I'm anxious to hear that. And Steve Cochran does one, and Roe does one. We all turn in an hour-long special that will run once or twice starting Christmas Eve night and through Christmas Day. If you're listening to WGN Radio over Christmas time, you're going to hear some fun things. One of the things that Elif and I put together for our show was that I thought, well, it would be nice if some of the staff just said Merry Christmas. You know, you heard people on the air, but even some people off the air just wish you, happy holidays. And then it dawned on me as I was thinking about that, how many different languages are spoken at the radio station that you don't hear on the air. And I counted about nine. And so throughout my hour, we sprinkled in these people, some of whom you know and some of whom you don't, wishing people Merry Christmas in their native tongue. Griffin and I just took those, and for about 45 seconds here, here's a little bit of what the staff sounds like speaking Turkish, Greek, Serbian, Farsi, French, Lou towards the end of this montage in Italian, I may have missed one.
You get some Spanish, I think.
And Spanish as well. Griff, go ahead and hit it. Here's a little bit of what we sound like wishing you a Merry Christmas.
Mutlu Noeller. Yeni yolunuz kutlu olsun. Bu sene Noel için arzu ettiğim ailem ile bol zaman geçirmek.
Hi, this is Andrea Darlis. Kala Kristugina. İme Andriani Darlas. Ke kronia pola ya olata.
Hey guys, Violeta Padromedic here. Srećan Božić I sretna Nova godina. Želim vam sve najbolje.
Hi, this is Art Nasiri. Sali jadid ro baraye shoma arzu muvaffaqiyat mikonam va omidvaram ke baraye shoma va khanevade va ham.
Bonjour, it's Frederick Mungenu. Je vous souhaite un joyeux Noël et une bonne année.
Hi, it's David Miranda in the WGN Radio Newsroom. Y lo que quiero para Navidad es que la gente alrededor mía siga siendo feliz para que me inyecten esas buenas vibras, esas buenas energías. Y en lo material, pues ropa, porque perdí mucho peso con el baile. So what I said is that I want people around me to continue to be happy so like that I can get the best vibes.
Oh, and I have one more. Roba che non paga pigioni, buttala fuori. Which translates to, stuff that doesn't pay you rent, get rid of it. Which is kind of a joke that you say when you pass gas. Merry Christmas.
Ho, ho, ho.
I think that's the same in every language.
You knew Lou would come up with something like that, right? We went to the Lincoln Park Zoo and looked at the holiday lights with Lou and Mary Beth. Brenda and I did a couple nights ago, and I forget what it was, but Lou was telling me about some saying or thing he does, and even now his adult children just roll their eyes and like, Dad, stop. No, don't, Dad, don't, stop. And I can just see Lou doing something in Italian, a wise old saying that translates to when you break wind. I don't know. Whatever it was that Lou just said, he's got a million of them. Merry Christmas in many languages and from all of us here at WGN. Heidi Stevens writes for the Chicago Tribune. She's one of their, I will describe her as rising stars. She's a columnist, and she went to the Michelle Obama Oprah Winfrey interview when the book tour came through town. These things are like stadiums. If Michelle Obama does want to run for president someday, this is how you do it. So she read the book. I read the book. I noticed that it's the number one best-selling book on the New York Times hardcover, ebook, audiobook. A lot of people are reading it. She and I both read it, and we're going to just talk a little bit about it after the 10:30 edition of WGN Radio News. If you are going to Barnes & Noble and want to shop for Christmas for somebody, here's one suggestion, becoming. And if not, we'll have some others for you as well. Michelle in the book describes her first encounter with the presidential motorcade, and it's kind of hilarious. Let me give you a line from that in a minute. It's 10:26. Speaking of our sponsors and commercials here, I was mentioning that there's this Kaplan Law Firm that does student loan debt forgiveness. That's their specialty. And Ray is frequently a guest on and a sponsor at this radio station. And Joe, this is the quiz for you. I'm pretty good about helping people remember phone numbers, even though I can't remember anything. So here is how you remember the phone number for Kaplan Law Firm. And Griffin, you'll have to remember this. No writing it down. But here's how you remember it for the student loan debt forgiveness attorney. Think of Mike Ditka driving around on the perimeter of the city. Because the number's 312, that's the city of Chicago. The perimeter of the city, the Tri-State Tollway, is 294. And what was Ditka's number? 89. The phone number's 312-294-8989. I can't remember my own phone number. I know the phone number for this place because I go, what's the thing where Mike Ditka's driving around town?
Well, it has to be two Ditkas then, right?
Well, it'd be Ditka and his twin.
Two Ditkas.
Steve Ditka.
Both smoking cigars, driving around.
Yeah, maybe drunk, I don't know, or just acting drunk. Out of breath!
Sunglasses on, top down, but 20 degree weather.
It's very creative. It does require you to remember more numbers, though. I didn't. I'm sorry. This is embarrassing, but I didn't know Mike Ditka's number. So
I didn't either.
Now I have to know that.
I did the same thing for Violetta. She goes, I don't know what Mike Ditka's number is. How does this help me? But I mean, so if
I know what his sweater looks like. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, because but a lot of
that's
people
his uniform to me.
That's fair, though, because a lot of people don't remember him mainly as a player. They remember him as the coach.
All right, then you guys come up with another way to remember 89. Well, now I've done you the service of both. If you're at a bar and they go, what was Ditka's number? You go, oh, I remember this debt relief attorney.
Oh, yeah, it's the end of the number.
So you'll just go, Ray Kaplan, and they'll go, no, that really doesn't help us, sir.
I would have done Patrick Kane plus one, Patrick Kane plus one.
Okay, let's try that. 88. Griff, did you know what Patrick Kane's number is? Okay, that's a no. Thank you, Don. It's 1038.
Only to bring you peace, only at Christmas time. Only the King of Kings, only what once was mine. It takes the end of time, it takes a long time.
Doing this because you know Sufjan's is my favorite Christmas album, or is this your favorite Christmas CD?
Oh, I love it too.
I was actually thinking about that the other day. If I lined up my favorite Christmas CDs and albums, and we've been doing things with Christmas music around here lately, would James Taylor be in my top five? I think he would. Would Sufjan be in my top five? He absolutely would. Would Nat King Cole or Johnny Mathis be? I think I have to at least let them represent. They'd have to be in my top five. Exciting news for you, Griffin. The Blenders are no longer in my top five.
Well, that actually makes me sad.
I have a CD of Christmas music sung kind of a cappella by a group called The Blenders, which is really nice, and they do a great Christmas show. My family hasn't enjoyed it over the decades as much as I have.
I feel like a Grinch for kicking that out of your top
five. You really
five.
Are. Yeah, you really
sorry.
Are.
Sorry.
So the number one hardcover book in America, the number e-book in America, the number one audio book in America is Michelle Obama's Becoming. I think if Sasha and Malia go to a bookstore anywhere in America today and see the displays with the piles of books by various people dedicated to their mom and dad, they're going to do the same eye roll they did when Barack was pardoning turkeys back in the day. It's like, oh, please. But this is really a good book. Becoming is not a political book. It's a memoir of a woman growing up on the south side of Chicago who became the first lady. And it all started that night at the 2004 Democratic National Convention. She reminds us that no one knew who Barack was. He was a state senator, unknown to most Illinoisans, who'd never spoken from a teleprompter or on live TV before. He memorized his 17-minute speech, explaining who he was and where he came from. And then, she says, he talked about his grandfather, a GI, who joined Patton's army, his grandmother, who'd worked on an assembly line during the war, his father, who'd grown up herding goats in Kenya, his parents' improbable love, their faith in what a good education could do for a son who was not born rich or well-connected. Earnestly and expertly, he cast himself not as an outsider, but rather as a literal embodiment of the American story. He reminded the audience that a country could not be carved up simply into red and blue, that we were united by a common humanity, compelled to care for the whole of society. He called for hope over cynicism. He spoke with hope, projected hope, almost sang with it, really. That was his first speech. When you think about Michelle Obama, and to some degree her husband, you maybe first that night, or maybe at Oak Park, at Grand Park after he was elected, you see Michelle as sort of this fully formed, mature, somewhat political figure. But when you read the book, you realize here's a lady whose definition of success was at one point juggling her job, juggling her kids. She has a husband who's often absent in the state legislature, and she's high-fiving herself mentally when she's able to buy applesauce and lunch for the kids, sit in the car and take a break before going back to her job. I mean, she's a working mom. She's not Michelle Obama yet. She's a working mom. And you don't get to her husband's greatest political aspirations until halfway through the book. One other note about this, to me, that's interesting. As much as you've heard the grand revelation that their children were conceived artificially or that she resents the president for putting them into harm's way, I don't think she spills many beans here. This is just her. There's not a lot of dish. It's just Michelle's story. At least that's how I read it. Heidi Stevens, the columnist at the Tribune, read it too. She and I have been talking off the air a little bit about it. Hi, Heidi. How are you?
Hi, John. I'm good. How are you?
You know, I thought of you. I'm doing well, thank you. Merry Christmas to your family and you.
Merry Christmas. I
thought of you when I first thought about this, not because you do book reviews for the Tribune, but because you were at the Michelle Oprah show in Chicago, right?
Heck yeah, I was.
yeah.
It was like the greatest night of my life. I mean, no offense to my wedding night, which is also lovely. But no, it was pretty fantastic.
Why?
Well, you know what? The warmth and the joy in the room that night, and by room, I mean, you know, United Center, was really unlike anything I've experienced recently. Actually, maybe since that night in Grand Park that you just mentioned. But it was super women centric. I mean, there were guys there, but it was just a whole bunch of women who saw something in themselves in her, who saw what they love about America and are proud about America and recognize about America up there on stage. I think we just felt hopeful and seen, and she was funny. She's really funny. She just has a great delivery, and she's down to earth in spite of having, you know, lived in the White House and, you know, rocking those boots she rocked the other day. And, I mean, she's not really the every woman, but she makes you feel like she is. And then, you know, she's sitting across from Oprah, so that was pretty cool too.
You know, it's funny you mentioned those boots. I was talking to those two about them to my wife yesterday. I said, did you see Michelle's boots? Because Brenda pays attention too, and I don't know that knowing about Michelle's boots is paying attention, but I wondered if she'd seen a pop-up on Facebook or online about it, and she hadn't. Michelle had thigh-high leather, yellow $4,000 boots on the other day when she was interviewed by Sarah Jessica Parker. and by golly, she pulled them off, didn't she?
She sure did, yeah. I mean, and actually it's impressive to be like the one whose fashion people are talking about when you're next to Sarah Jessica Parker, because she usually sort of owns that. But yeah, she's, I mean, you mentioned earlier it's not a political book. I think that you know that from what she's wearing on the cover, right? Like there she is showing, you know, that gorgeous strong shoulder, and this is not like a picture of someone who's going to run for office later. This is a picture of someone who does exactly what she set out to do, I think, in the book, which is, you know, pull back the curtain on her life in the White House, but also her life before that, which to me, maybe it's partly because I'm a Chicagoan and a working mom, but to me, it was really the coolest stuff in the book.
You know, I think that's interesting too. For instance, when she talked about buying the appropriate clothes for her daughters when her husband announced that he was going to run for president down in Springfield, and so there she. I mean, can a working mom relate? And maybe, you know, single moms or dads, whatever. But here's the dilemma of a modern American woman who's not the first lady. I've got to get the kids to and from things. I've got to do my job. My husband's not around right now. Oh, and we've got to get a hat for them because they might be on TV. What kind of hat? I got to get a hat that fits. Is the hat too glitzy? Well, that'll send a wrong signal. If it's too dowdy, that's a wrong signal. And she's sort of struggling with these things all the time. And so literally when they're on the stage or walking up to Brock's announcement, she's thinking about the hat slipping over Sasha's eyes because it's too big. That's a really human modern moment, isn't it?
So human and modern. That's a perfect way to say it. And I think that any man or woman right now, especially raising kids, can relate to that sense of, you know, what signal am I intentionally or unintentionally sending and going to maybe get blowback for. And you know, that can be as simple as, like, I let my kid eat, you know, fruit snacks at the park and the other parents are side-eyeing me because, you know, they have high fructose corn syrup. I mean, you know, not to make it petty, but, you know, you do sort of go around now feeling like you have an audience all the time, whether you do or not, and that audience is judging you. And she really did. And then you throw in there being a woman of color, raising two girls, you know, of color, and having the first, you know, black president as your husband, and all of the judgment that that entails, and all the vitriol they put up with. And so, you know, a hat is all of a sudden a really weighty choice, you know, that you have to make.
Fast forward to when David Axelrod pulls her aside. She thought she was doing great on the stump for Barack, and she was. But talk a little bit about the video session they did with her and what they showed her. You know the scene I'm talking about?
Remind me of that one.
Well, tell me if this resonated with you. I mean, so she thought she was doing really well, but when David and Valerie Jarrett sat her down, they said, watch some of the video. You're not smiling enough. A black woman who looks angry, you know, stridency will not serve either of you. And I forget what exactly caused them to do that, but there was something that came up, and she was just looking, and it might have been after she said that for the first time she was proud of her country, you know what I mean?
Yep, I think that is when it was. Yeah, I know. I mean, that is, I think, you know, an area that we really haven't made any progress on since. I think that tripped up Hillary too. It's like, you know, look approachable and affable and friendly and polite, but also look, you know, serious enough to handle, you know, whatever interest of national or international security should cross your desk. And, you know, it's a bind that women in the public eye find themselves in that, you know, that men really don't. I mean, certainly Trump, I don't know if we need to go there, but he came out of the gate swinging and angry and really taking America to task for being, you know, a loser and on its deathbed. And, you know, from his inauguration speech on, he has really traded on anger, and it has in a lot of ways worked to his advantage. You know, a woman, especially a woman of color, can't get away with that.
Well, remember when they were in Minnesota and Barack gave a speech, and then as he was walking, maybe she introduced him, but as the two of them crossed on stage, they gave each other a little fist bump. And
yes.
A commentator on Fox, and you know, she, for all of the slights that I think the Obamas have suffered, she's not settling scores in this book. I can't count on two hands the number of instances where she points out something and just wants to remind us how bad it was or settle a score. She does not do that, but she did not resist the temptation to remind us that as they exchanged that fist bump, a commentator on Fox News described it as a terrorist fist jab. And
that's right.
And you know, that's just, it just, I guess the whole point of this part of our conversation is the microscope under which she would be judged for everything. What's an anecdote or a scene in the book that jumped out at you? When people say, how is the book? What do you say about Becoming?
I mean, I love the small human moments. Maybe it's the time of year right now that's making this scene pop out in my mind. But I love when she talks about, I love the childhood stuff, you know, and she's growing up on the South Side of Chicago. And her, even, you know, her, I love her Whitney Young days. I love, for some reason, when she talks about her mom painting the fireplace onto the wall at Christmas. Do you remember that?
Yep.
You know, they didn't have a fireplace and they wanted a mantle and all that for Christmas, and her mom would paint it on the wall. And there's something so absolutely darling and dedicated and so filled with love in that moment to me. And, I just, you know, to picture, you know, the work and absolute, love and dedication her parents poured into her and her brother both, and to see where, you know, that led her, and really in my mind what she gives back. I mean, to me, she's known for a lot of things as First Lady, you know, certainly worked very hard at getting a lot of jobs for veterans and job training for veterans and healthier food in schools. But really, to me, she has been this sort of beacon of love and acceptance and hope for kids. You know, she visited tons of schools. She, when you look at video, I'm sure you've seen those videos that are going around Twitter of, like, you know, girls in line to meet her at her book signings. And some of these girls are, you know, they're like 5 or 6 years old. They're not, you know, young women who are, you know, deciding where to go to college or what career to take. Yeah. These are little girls. And she just, she exudes happiness to be in their presence. They exude happiness to be in her presence. And so I think it's that that makes those parts of the book when she's a girl just really kind of sing to me.
Heidi Stevens, columnist for the Chicago Tribune on the line. We'll end it there, Heidi. And I think you're right. If you read only the first 200 pages of this book before she became a national figure, it would be a really well-told story. And I'll add one. Her father gets MS, and her brother was really concerned, this is weird, about what would happen if there was a fire. Would their disabled father be able to get out well enough? And so he was, yeah. It was weird, but Craig was sort of distressed about, what are we going to do if there's a fire? He's a teenager at this time. And he literally forced his dad to practice him going, picking his dad up and carrying him out the door. And his dad's like, leave me alone. This is stupid. There's not going to be a fire. I'll get out. No, we're going to rehearse this, Dad. And so there he is, picking up his dad, scooping him up, and walking out, rehearsing, what will we do if there's a fire?
Yeah.
I don't know what else to say about that, except what an amazing, interesting young man her brother was, too. And that was part of their family life. Yeah.
Completely. Yeah, completely. I mean, they raised two fantastic
That's what it is.
Kids.
Yeah.
Fantastic kids who actually understood how fantastic their parents were, too.
That's what
you know, I mean, that combo is not common, I would say.
Becoming Michelle Obama. Happy holidays. My best to everybody over there. And, oh, by the way, on
you
Wednesdays,
too.
you're posting. Are you live streaming on Wednesdays? Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, I do a Facebook Live from the Tribune Newsroom every Wednesday at noon. It's just like a little 15-minute chat with, you know, I have a guest come in every week, some kind of newsmaker or interesting Chicagoan, and we chat for 15 minutes at noon on Wednesday. So, yeah, tune in if you can.
Heidi Stevens, thanks for your time. Keep doing what you're doing, Heidi.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
1055 WGN. There's a blizzard coming on. How I'm wishing I was home. For my pony's lame and he can hardly stand. You got there, Griff.
That's the song "The Blizzard." I think originally recorded by Jim Reeves.
Wow!
Or something.
Oh, wow! No kidding, really.
Or at least he's done a famous version of it, covered by many people.
Yeah. So is that your idea of a Christmas song for us here today?
It's a Christmas song.
No, I didn't say that it wasn't.
Maybe more of a winter song, but it's traditionally played around this time.
Yeah.
And that was the version by Camera Obscura.
Yeah, no kidding. I recognize
my favorite band.
We know. It's 11:10 on WGN. This is John Williams. Just to go back to what Don was saying, so Mitch McConnell is on the Senate floor right now, and he's continuing to say the Democrats are being obstinate, not giving the president the money he wants. I'm trying to figure out how encouraged we can be that they might call the Senate and Congress, the House back, the Congress back, to try and get this funding issue resolved. And I don't have anything more to say about that other than they've been at it for, well, the government has been quote unquote shut down, about 20% of services not being funded for 12 hours, 10 minutes, and 8 seconds. Thank you, CNN. I think that's a little dramatic. I don't think we need a government countdown, shutdown clock on the screen at all times. That feels like piling on to me.
They finally found a way to crank up the tension from their breaking news ticker, which is always, always on the screen.
You know, they had a countdown clock to the shutdown. Now they have a countdown clock as long as the shutdown goes. We know it's shut down. Right. We know it's shut down.
And they're just going to leave it up there.
I know. And with every tick you go, it's sort of like the debt clock. You know, why don't they put that up, too? That would make me feel unpleasant.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you get the national debt clock up there and a number of birds who have flown into buildings? That's not pleasant. Do we have a counter on that?
The doomsday clock.
The doomsday clock, how close we are to nuclear annihilation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we'll keep you posted on that. but right now, I'm just reading a scroll now from CNN, Senate pushing pause button until Trump Democrats reach agreement to end shutdown.
McConnell has said that there will be no further action on the Senate floor until some kind of compromise to end the shutdown's reached.
Yeah, well, the House passed it, but there's not enough votes in the Senate. They need more than 50 votes in the Senate, or 51, so we'll keep you posted if anything else happens between now and, well, whenever. We've got our own government shutdown coverage clock going. We're 12 hours and almost 12 minutes into it. Speaking of counting things down or watching the news scene, it's time for our Mincing Rascals podcast broadcast. Judge the best podcast in the city of Chicago this year, The Mincing Rascals. Include some of your friends here at WGN Radio and at the Chicago Tribune, where Eric Zorn and Scott Stantis join us. Zorn, the columnist, Stantis, the editorial cartoonist. And then from WGN Radio, it's almost always me and Steve Bertrand from our newsroom, and Patty Vasquez, who is on pretty late on WGN Radio at 10 o'clock weeknights. Patty's in the mix. In fact, she's the first voice I think you're about to hear. Rather than dive into the news of the day, I asked the gang to tell us something that they enjoy doing in the Chicago area at Christmas time. So, Griff, let's start the Mincing Rascals here.
Mine is the Lincoln Park Zoo lights. This year, they really went above and beyond. It's absolutely beautiful.
For the first time ever, I went to them last night.
Oh, really? Our first time.
I thought it was pretty terrific.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
I love it. And the lagoon, it's all cozy over there. You get a nice hot chocolate, walk back through the zoo again.
It's amazing how many lights they have lit.
Yeah, it's dazzling.
And sometimes it's crowded. It wasn't on our night, but it really is a fun stroll through the lit up zoo.
Yeah.
How about you, Scott?
Okay, crazy. Klingon Christmas Carol. It's Dickens' Christmas Carol done in Klingon, and it's awesome.
That's great.
We're not kidding.
No one's judging.
I am quietly judging him.
Yeah.
Not so quietly. You went,
where do they do that?
Theaters around town. It's been a tradition. They actually stopped doing it for a year, but for the almost decade I've lived here, we've gone 8 years.
Wonder why they would have stopped that.
It's the thing
while.
You're getting for Janine tickets to Klingon Christmas.
My favorite Chicago Christmas tradition is to never go to the Klingon Christmas Carol.
Oh, yeah.
That's our new one. We're starting it.
I've been doing it all my whole life.
Well done. Oh, come on.
Gather around, kids. We're not going to.
What are we not doing again this year, Mom?
Yay! We're not going to that Klingon
too. It's awesome. I swear. Oh God, it's actually awesome.
What does it sound like? What's the line?
Yeah.
Klingon
don't do that.
Mach, which is, I'm proud to be a Klingon. The greeting in Klingon is, what do you want? It's how Scrooge, or Scrooge, doesn't have any courage, and how the three spirits of Klingon Christmas come and give him courage. Right. Through the course of the evening. It's a great show.
No, it's great.
It's like reminds me of the Big Bang Theory.
It does sound.
One year we walked in and there was a whole row of people in the audience dressed as Klingons.
Scott, I will give you a tradition, but I'm worried about your enthusiasm.
Yeah, that's it.
You care just a little too much.
It's wonderful. It's a blast. It sounded goofy. I went for the first year and we've been going ever since.
Steve, what do you like?
It's pathetic. I can't think of anything that we do every year for Christmas. You should just come down for the caroling by the bean, which is nice.
Oh yeah. Well, I think it doesn't have to be an annual tradition, but that's a great thing
that counts.
Too. Mr. Zorn?
I like the lights on the houses in Chicago, particularly like up in Lincolnwood. Northwest side, we do pretty well by lights on houses. We've got lights on our bushes this year. Really great. It brightens up.
Sounds like a Halloween costume.
It brightens up December. I wish that people would leave their Christmas or holiday lights up a little longer in January and February. I just think there's such gloomy months, and the lights are so cheerful, and I feel there's no rush to take them down, and yet everybody looks on that trash if you don't get them down before, like,
That has developed commercially You know, a lot of businesses do it a lot longer. Michigan Avenue does it a lot longer than they used to.
Well, especially it's just the winter. Especially if it's just the white twinkle lights, then it's, you know, it's
but
just kind of
cool. But your neighbors don't.
Yeah.
I wish Michigan Avenue kept them up year-round on the trees, because it just makes the avenue look prettier.
I will add Songs of Good Cheer, Eric Zorn, yes. Mary Schmidt, oh, and yes. the gang from nice. The Old Thank Town you. School of Folk Music. I wasn't able to attend this year. Brenda was there. She was in tears. She brought friends. It was just so heartwarming. It's wonderful. And another thing that we've been doing and are going to continue to do now is going to the Music Box Theater in Chicago and going to either It's a Wonderful Life or White Christmas. And you sort of interact with the screen. They have an organ play Christmas music beforehand in this big old theater.
Is it like Rocky Horror Picture Show? You interact with the screen? Like you throw toast and stuff?
In the case of White Christmas, it is a little bit. People sing along. They laugh at some of the lines that haven't traveled the test of time very well. And people dress up in outrageous Christmas sweaters and outfits and blinking lights, and they bring their own booze and popcorn, and they buy booze and popcorn, and it's a riot.
They also did this year for a fundraiser for Chicago Help Initiative, Miracle on 34th Street.
Okay, we're going to do our normal now version of the podcast.
That was my 80s reference.
For Christmas, shouldn't we give the president his border wall?
John Williams is beaten down.
We talked about this last week. Let's not talk a lot about it, but when you put your foot down, you put your foot down. If the president said, I need $5 billion or I won't play ball, then maybe.
He did say in the Nancy and Chuck meeting, he said, if we can't get it from Congress or elsewhere. So he did sort of leave open the idea. Because remember, they said they were going to search for other cabinet level positions.
GoFundMe.
So that they were going to find other cabinet positions where they could get the money, so that the taxpayers didn't have to pay for it. Sarah Sanders.
Sort of shuttle money from other departments.
Right. Because the taxpayers don't pay for this.
Apparently, she didn't understand the taxpayers paid for
those
other departments, too.
Did you hear, though, that there was a group of veterans in 3 days. They did a GoFundMe page this week for the wall.
Yeah.
And they got, like, in 3 days, $900,000.
Oh, no, it's over $2 million now.
Is it over $2 million?
Yeah, as of this morning.
Okay.
What percentage of $5 billion
is that? Great, but that's still not getting it done.
That's 8 feet of wall.
It kind of is. If they're willing to do that, that says that there is some support out there for what the president is doing.
There is definitely support for the wall. I just don't think it's anywhere close to majority support in the polls that I've seen about this. And the Democrats have met him a certain distance on border security. They've given him, what was it, $1.6
billion? Yeah.
But it has to be for sort of enhanced border security techniques. No one has really demonstrated a need for more wall. And there's nothing, you know, the Obama administration spent a lot of money reinforcing the fencing along the border and so on. It's not like there's some, you know, the Democrats or people have some objection to a physical barrier between the countries. It's just that Trump has raised the symbolism of this wall to such a high political point that the Democrats are just saying, no, we're not going to give you this victory. We're going to give you, you know, X billion for border security, but we're not going to let you build your stupid wall because we don't need a wall as you're describing it. And so they've dug in, and I think they've got support from enough Republicans. This ain't going to go through.
I don't know if it was here last week, but there are ways to spend the money so much smarter and more effective. And I don't know if it was on the podcast or somewhere, but I repeated what Senator Durbin said. We need a lot of the opioids come into the country through legal border crossings, and we have access to the technology that could stop that. But we're not spending money on that. Instead, we're fighting over this wall.
Well, I think what the great negotiator Donald Trump doesn't get, and it's amazing how badly he's played this, is that people so dislike him or distrust him, either in the mainstream media or on the Democratic side or somewhere in between the right and the left, that even if it were a good idea, it's a harder sell. I totally believe that while we could afford this, we're not going to now because the left is being as stubborn as the right. How surprised were you all by the sentence delay for Michael Flynn?
I was very surprised that I thought my forecast was that the judge was going to give him some time because of what he had done, was not going to go along with either the prosecution or the defense's claim that he deserved no time, but it was going to be something symbolic on the order of the sentence that Papadopoulos served, which was, what, 2 weeks or something? I mean, just to say that you can't totally walk scot-free on something like this. I was surprised that they delayed it, though. Yeah, and I'm not exactly sure what to make of the fact that it's not till March now. And the Mueller's team has indicated that they have squeezed every last drop of information out of Flynn that they can squeeze. That's why they're ready to go to sentencing.
But don't you think it's strange, too, that the judge said, you're a traitor. You
treason. He used the word.
He apologized for that afterwards. But yeah, he actually said, "How is this not treason?"
Well, in particular, because the defense team was trying to go with, "Well, he was ambushed or tricked by the FBI." You know, they thought that they would throw a Hail Mary. That ticked off the judge. They thought they would take a last minute chance and say, you know, try to persuade the judge and say, "Well, you know, our poor guy here, he didn't know what he was getting into.
He was not informed by the FBI that lying to the FBI is a crime." I'm not making that up.
And that fueled a weekend of conspiracy theories from Fox TV and the president and all of those that were all refuted directly by Flynn under oath in the courtroom this week. You know, the judge put him under oath and asked him, was he ambushed or did he not know and all of this stuff? And Flynn disputed all of those conspiracy theories.
Well, good enough. But, I mean, I'm amazed that anybody would even try and fly that. Lying is wrong. Lying to the FBI is wrong. Lying to the FBI is a crime. If you didn't know that, shouldn't the first two have been enough? I mean, you shouldn't be lying to the FBI.
It was a terrible play by his attorneys to bring that up in their sentencing memo, to try to say, well, we're pleading guilty, and he's a fine man, and by the way, we shouldn't look too harshly on this because he was ambushed. I mean, that was just crazy on their part.
Former director of the Defense Intelligence Agency.
I know some eighth graders who know lying to the FBI could get you in jail. You're wearing an FBI hat right now. Did you realize that?
Yeah, I wear it quite often, actually.
So we can't lie to you now either? Lying to Patty Vasquez is a crime.
As a graduate of the Citizens Academy of the FBI.
You are.
She would stop ambushing us.
But sure. If Patty would just stop asking us to tell the truth, it'd be a lot easier. That's Patty Vasquez from WGN Radio, Eric Zorn, the columnist, Scott Stantis, the editorial cartoonist at the Chicago Tribune, our own Steve Bertrand, too. The full Mincing Rascals podcast is available wherever you listen to finer podcasts. You can also click onto it right at WGNradio.com. It's usually there somewhere on our front page. Judge the best in the city. By the way, speaking of kids, you know, I referenced eighth graders there. There are some kids who are ringing bells for the Salvation Army in a musical sort of way. I think they are in Libertyville. Let's go there in a minute on WGN. I don't care what the people say. Okay, I'm totally digging that song, Griffin. What are we listening to there?
Oh, you don't know that one?
I recognize the voice. I don't know that I've heard that song before.
That is Julian Casablancas, the lead singer of The Strokes.
That's why I recognize the voice, but that's awesome.
Doing his version of a song that originated on Saturday Night Live. It was a sketch. It was just a song performed by Jimmy Fallon and
Chris Kattan.
Chris Kattan, Horatio Sanz. And
Tracy Morgan.
Sort of. He was just standing there dancing. But Horatio Sanz was the one singing and playing a really dinky, weird guitar. And just it was the lamest sort of melody. And then Chris Kattan was holding the keyboard that Jimmy Fallon was playing a drum machine on. So it was just a very lo-fi. And I think the joke was just how dinky and lame the song was. But it was just a fun little minute and a half.
And the vocals are from?
Well, they were from Horatio Sanz.
Oh, I thought you said it was the guy from The Strokes.
In the original thing they did on SNL was those four. And then, I don't know, some 10 years later, that was in the 90s, maybe like 10, 12 years later, Julian Casablancas came on Jimmy Fallon's late night show to do it with The Strokes. And then put out this actual recording of the song, too, and made it totally awesome.
Totally awesome. I want to have a Christmas party and just play that for everybody to jump up and down. That's really fun.
Oh, it's a great. Yeah, I love it.
I Wish It Was Christmas Today, eh?
It's called, I Wish It Was Christmas Today by Julian Casablancas.
On a scale of 1 to 100, I'm giving that song a 94. Wow, John, that's high. Joe Brand, 1 to 100, go.
95.
Griffin, go.
Yeah, 95. I love it.
Newsroom.
87.
A little reality never hurts. That's okay.
Well, let's keep in mind, he's 7 points off your score. There's out of 100, that's not much.
Still pretty
good. I'm always on this with you. If you hated the song, you would have given it an 81. But you love it, so you give it a 94.
Right.
That has to change. That has to change.
You mean the things that I don't like? Really
In the new year, that has to change.
Fair enough, Griff. I'll think about that.
I think when you hate something, it's like sub 50. If you hate it, it should be like in the 10s, 20s.
Yeah.
You never do that.
No, I don't.
Yeah. Something to think about.
By the way, since really this is Griffin's musical recommendation that sometimes peppers the show, let's do what we do at the end of The Mincing Rascals. Something you're reading, listening to, watching, eating, or drinking. Something that you would recommend for our listeners to enjoy, maybe, or that you enjoy. Joe Brand, you go first.
Something we used to do a lot when I was a kid. My mom always worked downtown, but we were always just hanging out in the suburbs a lot. And after Christmas, we would always make it a point to go downtown, when a lot of people are off, obviously the schools are off, and just check out all the decorations. I mean, if you don't get down to the Loop quite often, it is pretty cool to see, just to walk down the streets and do some window shopping post-Christmas when everything's still up. And the weather's kind of cooperating right now. It's actually a tradition I kind of want to bring back with my family. But it was always something fun we would do. We just make a day out of it and do a little staycation in Chicago.
You know, I think you could almost... Here's the way I would chart it out, too. I would start over by Daly Plaza, maybe. And I would go by the Macy's and go see the windows. Maybe you go in, maybe you don't. Maybe you visit one of the restaurants there if you're having lunch. And then you could walk up to the river if you were doing it in the evening, and you could see the laser light Christmas decorations that they display on the 2.5-acre facade of the Merchandise Mart. It's the largest such display in the world, and
yeah,
they do
cool.
that for a couple of hours in the evening. Then you can make a right-hand turn, head over to Michigan Avenue. The tree that is in the courtyard, the concrete courtyard by the old Tribune Tower, is a beautiful tall tree in front of the Apple Store. You guys know the one I'm talking
right,
about?
Yep.
Yeah, Pioneer Plaza. Yeah.
Pioneer Plaza with the blue lights. I guess you could go down to Millennium Park and see the tree there, but you know that's a nice picture if you're looking for a photo op. And then head on from wherever you want to go there, up and down Michigan Avenue. It's pretty this time.
I mean, you should be a tour guide. That was a great laid out.
Definitely.
And at 9 o'clock, you should stop here. And
yes, exactly.
I think even the Riverwalk might still be open. A few of the shops, I know they have those Orbs, and some other bars have like extended tent areas where you can still enjoy that, even though. But again, the weather's not terrible right now, so why not take advantage of it?
Here's my recommendation. Watch The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Have you guys been watching this at all? What is it, Amazon Prime? It's really funny series.
Yeah, I've heard of it. I know it's, I think it's up for a SAG award.
It should be. And everybody's disappointed the way I'm hearing it with the second season compared to the first. But I didn't see the first season yet. I've only been watching the second season because Brenda watched the first season. So I caught up to her when she was starting the second. So if the second season isn't as good as the first, fine. But just speaking on behalf of those of us who didn't have that comparison, we just saw the second season. I think it's terrific. If for no other reason, the soundtrack and the clothes. Remember when you first saw Mad Men and you thought, oh my God, this is just so cool to look at?
Yeah,
right.
That's the way Mrs. Maisel is. It is really fun visually. And the soundtrack is a hoot. And the characters are very funny. And so it feels like that. If you liked Gilmore Girls, you'll like this. If you didn't like Gilmore Girls, you still might like this.
Nice.
So that's my recommendation this week.
What time frame is it?
No idea. It's this thing that's on television when my wife has the
clicker. I think it's in the 50s.
Oh, time frame.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I misspoke.
Oh, which period of time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like
50s?
But I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I would say, let me think of some of the cultural references that pop up. Yeah, ballpark 1960. Don Draper's working at an ad agency while you're watching this. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
And Mad Men started in 1960.
Go ahead, Griff. What do you recommend?
All the way through the 60s. Do you want to talk about Mad Men some more? We can do that.
Why, sure.
Mad Men and Saturday Night Live. We're good.
It's my favorite show. I guess, so recommendations, right?
Let's do that.
And possibly with a Christmas bent. I've been pushing for this on the show a little bit, but I just want to spread the word that you should watch. Pick a movie that is either Christmas adjacent, set at Christmas, but not fully Christmassy. Right? There's a lot of good ones. I'll list them in a second. Or just any movie at all. Just pick one to watch at Christmas that's not like totally one of the Christmas classics, and then watch it every time around the same time with your family or with the same people. It's fun, and they don't all have to be Elf, which I love the ones that everybody loves too.
Right. So let's do the list.
I like mixing it up a little more around this time of year.
So like Mean Girls.
That'd be perfect, honestly.
Really? Like, yes. That's a Christmas movie now?
Well, it does have a Christmas scene, but it doesn't even have to do that. The Rocking Around the Christmas Tree.
Oh, God, yes. That's the one.
Number.
Okay, all I know is I've seen video outtakes from that, and I want to watch that.
It's a wonderful movie all the way through, but it has that, too. That's a bonus. But, yes, that's exactly what I'm thinking of. Or, like, Paddington 2. Just House a great Paddington. Movie that everyone will love, guaranteed. Just watch it every year around this time.
And there's that has a Christmas?
No, it doesn't have to. That's my point.
I know that, but should it even mention Christmas?
There's an aspect of Christmas in it, though.
I think if you pick a movie and watch it once a year with the same people, that movie will become special to you no matter what. Like,
But it could also become like, okay, now we got to watch this movie again.
I know. So you got to pick the right one, but I think Mean Girls is a great choice. It's got to be rewatchable and have some broad appeal.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I think Mean Girls fits that category. I think Paddington 2, I know Paddington 2.
I could throw Diner into my Christmas movie
Absolutely.
List.
Absolutely. So, okay, or if you want to keep it kind of Christmassy, some that you might not have watched this year.
All right, you're about to hear the most obtuse Christmas
not
list.
At all. No, oh. People will know these.
No, but
I think,
but not for Christmas. Maybe. Well, let's hear your list.
Okay. What'd you just say? Diner. Great choice.
Thank you, Griffin.
Like You've Got Mail, I would say too. This is before my official list, but You've Got Mail would be a great one to watch around this time every year.
Keep going.
Okay. Shop Around the Corner, the movie that You've Got Mail is based on, set all at Christmas. It's the best. We've talked a little bit about that. Metropolitan. Do you remember that movie?
I love that movie. But who's heard of that, though? That's a little out of people's reference point, off their radar.
That is the point, right, that I'm trying to make. In the 90s, set all at Christmas or in winter in New York. Fantastic. The Holiday. Everybody watches that. I think that's one that people do, but I just keep that one going. The Apartment, Jack Lemmon, a Billy Wilder movie with Shirley MacLaine. Tangerine, look up the subject matter. Maybe not for the whole family, but... it came out a couple years ago, set on Christmas Eve in Los Angeles. Carol also came out a couple years ago. Cate Blanchett, Rooney Mara. You know, Die Hard.
I was wondering if that was going to make your list.
That falls into this, although some people say it's just a straight up Christmas movie, and I see that point too.
I love how contentious the debate is over whether Die Hard's Christmas
I will join
or not.
That debate at any time and argue against it, but I'm not convinced
that you've seen it, though. Respond to that.
I'm not going to justify that question with response.
And Gremlins is another one.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I'm more about the top half of that list, because I think people always watch Die Hard and stuff like that, but something to think about.
Okay, so that's your list? I think that's interesting.
No, watch all those.
Yeah.
Do your homework.
This from a guy
every
who's...
year with the same people every Christmas.
Right.
I'm just saying.
No one's coming to your house anymore, Griff.
I just get a little sick of hearing about the same. It's truly like five or six movies.
It
every
really
Christmas.
Is.
Like,
it is.
A little
actually,
tiny.
Talk
a little
about
tiny.
How great Love Actually is some more.
And I watch them all. I do them all too. I'm not above them, but. It would be fun to let's get some other things going.
Well, you know what happened, Don, was I said about this year, earlier than I should have, like not that long after Thanksgiving, to say, okay, to start every hour of my show, I'll play a clip from a Christmas movie, any Christmas movie, and then roll into some Christmas music. It'll be fun. Mm. It was really fun for about a week and a half, 2 weeks. And then I realized all I had left was Christmas Vacation and Elf and, you know, just some of the Grinch and Charlie Brown. And if you listen to my Christmas special, those are the clips that I always play because those are my reference points.
Yeah.
And it's not 10 movies deep for me. It's about six. You know, it doesn't go that far.
I guess you could add Harry Potter into that list for Griffin, too.
Yeah, that's got a lot of those have good Christmas scenes.
True.
Yeah. Somebody just called in saying The Godfather. Do that.
Nice.
I hate that. And I'm actually disappointed in myself that I focused on the Christmassy, like sort of Christmassy movies. But truly, just pick one that you want to watch.
Ooh, The Departed.
How many movies did
Do
you...
The Departed every Christmas. Yeah. Fantastic.
How many movies did you watch this year?
Like 180, around there.
Your goal was one every day.
So I more hit one every other day.
Yeah.
I really missed the mark by quite a bit.
180 is still pretty good.
Yeah, 180. I haven't done anything 180 times this year.
Yeah.
I haven't done anything 180 times this year.
Shower?
Is there a movie that you would say stood out above the rest?
Yeah, actually, I talked about this with Matt last week. And
pardon me. Okay.
No, it's okay. When he was in For You. And I said, but I'll reiterate it, because I don't know if a lot of people know this movie. It's called The Night of the Hunter. 1950, starring Robert Mitchum. I don't know. And it was pretty recent, so maybe it's recency bias, but I was absolutely blown away.
That you recently saw it, yeah, but a movie that's almost 70 years old.
That's true, yeah. But that's probably the best thing that I saw this year. The Night of the Hunter.
Okay, 11:53. Thank you for that, Griff. We'll pause for a minute. This is WG. It's the second. We'll explain the oh no in just a second. It's the second after 12 noon on WGN. Hey, Tim, it's John Williams. You win the tickets if you can tell me the name of the football player we told you to remember.
That would be Mike Ditka, and I'm glad he changed it because I didn't know the original clue.
The phone number was 312-294-8989. And Joseph, right, well, that would be Patrick Kane plus one. But I remembered it as Ditka. So either way, hey, this is a really fun thing. Hold on, talk to Griffin. We'll make sure you get the prize, okay?
Thanks, John. I appreciate it. Merry Christmas.
Yeah, likewise to you, too. Okay, so a Klingon is in our studio now.
Well, I was listening to Mincing Rascals earlier, as I do, and I heard you and Scott Stantis talking about how he loves to go to Klingon Christmas Carol every year. And I was reminded about 8 or 9 years ago, I was invited to do a cameo as Fezziwig's wife. And of course, in the original, that's a merry little scene that Scrooge is watching to see what Fezziwig is doing there on the holiday. But in Klingon Christmas Carol, Scooge is observing Fezziwig's house, and it's a fight because that's how Klingons show love. So I had to come out and scream a line in Klingon that means, when challenged, you fight.
So is the whole thing done in Klingon?
It is. And there's subtitles above it, like an opera.
Oh, gosh. And is Klingon's a made-up language?
It is.
So is it really a language that was made up, or is it just sounds and there's no consistency?
It's really a language that was made up. In fact, all of the cast members, the reason there's very low turnover on that show is because the cast members take the time to learn Klingon. Yeah, there's an actor named Kevin Alvis that I've had on the program before because he's wow. A very accomplished actor. He's done a lot of things. He played Scrooge for a couple of years. And he
taught yourself, didn't you?
Yeah, he talked all about how he had to learn Klingon for the program.
Amy Guth, what are you guys doing today?
Well, we are not talking about Klingons, but we are going to be talking about some legal troubles facing Goldman Sachs right now and the CEO's response to that. And we're going to take a look at how startups and turnover, and sometimes, you know, startups aren't the most stable thing. They can often leave employees and customers in a lurch with very little notice. So we're going to take a look at that, as well as look at some holiday numbers and just business-wise what the holidays have looked like so far this year.
Happy holidays. Merry Christmas, everyone. Thanks for listening. I'll be back after a Christmas break, and you are set to go.